The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Listen. This week on Unbox, I'm speaking with Max Fosh. Max began his YouTube journey whilst he was at university in 2016, where he began with a series of short street interviews. His channel has later evolved into an adventurous world where Max explores bigger story-led content, which all started with a mission to find a stock image model across the globe and later led on to paying a private investigator to follow him around for a month whilst documenting the process. He's had an incredibly impressive year, including a venture into the world of stand-up comedy, selling out Edinburgh across a whole month, increasing subscriber count at the same time by almost 1 million new subs, and now he's pulling up a front row seat for us to have a look into the skills and lessons that have helped him succeed. Let's get into it with Max. Max.
Hello.
Hello. Thank you so much for coming on Unbox.
Thank you very much for having me.
So firstly, I want to ask you, what excites you about being in the creator economy?
What excites me is the speed at which things can be done. I've been making videos for kind of 5 years, and even the speed at which I started making my first ever video was so quick. And I made my first video because I was at Newcastle University, and the Television Society had a series called Big Market Banter, and it was all about kind of like going out on nights out and interviewing members of people on nights out. And I messaged them and asked whether I could be one of the presenters, and they said, no, sorry, we've got all the presenters for this year, but you can be a runner, whatever. And I thought, well, I could just do the same thing, but just with my own camera and my microphones. That's exactly what I did. And so I had from the idea to making the first episode ever of my first ever video was like 48 hours and 72 hours.
Yeah.
And that's what I love so much. I can have an idea on Monday and there'll be a video on Sunday of that exact idea.
Yeah. And I guess that's a gift and a curse in a way, right? Because
When
you are entirely, it's all on you, it's all on your schedule, and you know you can always push more, you can always do more, that is almost a never-ending game of chasing your tail in a way, right?
Yeah.
I mean, how have you found that from that first video, and how do you find that now?
It's never that chasing the tail is a really good way of looking at it, and I don't think it hasn't got easier. In the, if anything, it's got harder, because then there's this added pressure on for a video to do well, whereas previously you were making a video because I liked making videos. But as I've continued and the numbers have got bigger, they shouldn't, but the numbers have changed what I make, because there's all sorts of different metrics. I'm a business now. I need to think of metrics, and I have to think of ways in which, okay, I need to average a certain number of views on each video, so therefore I can go to brands and I'll get more money from brands to be able to do bigger videos. So it's probably got harder as I've grown, definitely. Mm. And you start having to think of things that aren't involved in like making a video, just like,
yeah,
accounting or building a team or getting a workspace. These are not things that I had to think about when I first started, but it's kind of the what comes with having videos that do well and it being a business.
Yeah. And what was that moment for you when it changed?
It was with one of your old people you've had on the pod, Zach Alsop. I did a video with him when I was on about 1,000 subscribers, and we broke into London Fashion Week. I dressed up in silly clothing and we pretended I was this incredibly hot new model on the scene called Maximus Bucharest. And we just basically blagged our way into loads of events, loads of shows. And Zach made a video about this whole process called I Faked a Model to the Top of London Fashion Week. He posted it and just boom, it got, I think now it's on 33 million views after three or four years. And I just being in that video went from 1,000 subscribers to 80,000 subscribers in about 2 weeks.
Wow.
And so that was just like, okay, right, I've now got an audience. Let's take this a little bit seriously. And weirdly, I did just exactly the same thing I'd been doing before I had released that video. But that was my moment where I was, okay, now I can do this kind of full time and I've got an opportunity here. But what I quite like is that Zach and I's, our YouTube careers are so intertwined.
Yeah.
Because we did that video today with Jay, but Jay is no longer making YouTube.
He's living life in Mexico.
He's living the life in Mexico.
Having a good time. And how did you find, how did it feel like having
the extra 70,000 eyeballs on what you were doing.
It is amazing. It is amazing at the time, and it's the biggest buzz you can get when you go viral. You have a video that hits the algorithm. It's just the most kind of dopamine you'll get in one hit that you can imagine. But after a while, that does filter down. And I remember I was watching a video about Mark Rober, and he was with Colin and Samir, who are two incredible creators that you should definitely check out. But Mark was talking about the first time that he got a comment on a YouTube video, and he used to get an email that came through that says, "You've been like, this person's left a comment." And he said that he got more excitement than dopamine from three or four emails telling like three or four people have commented that he does on videos that get 30, 40, 50 million views. And I genuinely think that's like so true. Like your propensity to enjoy your success on YouTube. I think this is probably just generally in life and in business. It is a very much a diminishing returns.
So talk us through a video where you've smashed that, where like the narrative, the beats, the structure is great, and tell us what the ingredients are that make that video a success.
So I think I made a video where I served roadkill to food critics without them knowing. So the premise of the video was I went out, I found some roadkill on the side of the road. I then gave it to a chef. He then prepared it into a really fancy meal, and we gave it to food critics, and we got their thoughts on it. And from before I started, I'm always thinking, what's the headline? So basically, what's the title? And also, what's the thing that people are going to talk to their mates down at the pub at? So with that one, it was really clear. It was, did you hear about the guy who got some roadkill and gave it to some food critics? That can be, that whole video is succinctly explained in just one sentence. One way that helps me find that title is through contradiction. Contradiction, I find, is the easiest way for me to come up with video ideas. So you think of something that you do every day or is really obvious, and then you do the most extreme version of that. So, like, okay, actors. Who's the oddest person I could get to act?
Yeah.
My family member. Oh, what about an adult actor who maybe not have the greatest reputation for being the best actors? And that was a really fun video. I really enjoyed it. And so I'm always thinking about contradictions, and roadkill's the best. Okay, you see roadkill. What's the weirdest thing I could do with this roadkill? I could serve it as a meal.
But also, isn't that the essence of comedy as well, which we'll obviously touch into? What makes something funny is you're taking one thing and you're contradicting it, and that contradiction and the juxtaposition is what makes you laugh, right? Yeah.
Specificity is comedy is the sentence that I like to think about. So you're telling a story about a friend. If you give even if you give a name, inherently that makes that story slightly more entertaining and slightly funnier. But yes, the roadkill video. So I come up with the title. I know, okay, that's an intriguing title. Are people going to want to click on that? Yes, they're going to have questions. Okay, where did you find the roadkill? What do the food critics say? So I've got my title, and then I'm thinking, okay, I'm thinking of beats then. So I edit a lot to music. So I put classical music down as basically beds, two or three different tracks of classical music, and they form almost chapters. And I use classical music because they have a very obvious beginning and a narrative and a very obvious ending and crescendo. And so in the video, you want, if you've got three tracks of classical music, the last track is your big finish, your big payoff, and the two beforehand are the journey, and then there should be a crisis point at the end of that journey. Something goes wrong.
You're so right, actually. Like classical music, especially some of the great composers, like, it's all about narrative and it's all about storytelling and taking you on that journey. And actually, those principles are the same for classical music in the 17th century as they are for making YouTube videos right now, right?
And they're also copyright free, so it's great.
It's great.
It's great.
Very cheap.
Fantastic. Very cheap. Wonderful.
I love it.
So yeah, and then within the video, I'm thinking of crisis points. Now, and sometimes they will happen organically, like with roadkill. It's quite hard to find some roadkill that is edible or in good condition. So that was one beat in that particular video. And then there's another crisis point of, I'm not telling these food critics what I'm serving them. And so will they get upset? Like, is that okay? Is that even illegal? And so that is how I'm thinking of that, just that structure before I start filming, and hopefully something that will come up just naturally and organically. And if so, great, I'll keep it in there. But if not, I will kind of with voiceover. Voiceover is the best because you can then, you can build that tension even if it didn't happen on the day.
Voiceover almost is like music, isn't it, really? It kind of adds, you can create stops and pauses and you can bring the temperature up and down. And it creates that again, that narrative in terms of the audio and in terms of the pacing, in a way that you can't do if you're purely using clips. You can, but it's a different sort of structure and skill set, isn't it?
I think people are using voiceover more and more. So YouTube have recently just obviously released shorts. So it's kind of short form, 60 second content. And I've realized that people who are making short form videos, the entire thing is voiceover with very small interjections within the video just to punctuate that voiceover. Yeah. And so we're seeing creators who are now just basically just talking over the top of themselves doing something because it's probably more engaging for an audience.
And that's a lot of TikTok as well, isn't it?
That's so a lot
much
of TikTok.
So almost all of TikTok really is voiceover. Very few people actually are speaking direct to camera, right? Yeah.
Amazing. Because you can inform exactly how you want the story to flow in voiceover, whereas it's sometimes you kind of look back at a clip that you might have talked to camera in a certain environment, like, damn it, that doesn't work with the flow right now. That's fine. I can
I guess in an age where every frame, every moment counts, it's interesting that people have gravitated to that, and it almost shows in a way that that is the best way of telling stories, in that, you know, people wouldn't have done it if it didn't get views, if it didn't work, because these things are fueled by algorithms. So it's interesting that there's been this gravitational pull to more voiceover-led content and controlling narrative in a more, I guess, more precise way, because everyone has had to become far more efficient in the way that they tell stories in order to get views.
Yeah, and I'm a big advocate of that. The best creators in the world, every successful YouTuber, TikToker, Instagram is doing is they're just telling a story, but it's just the length of time in which they're able to tell that story changes. I've realized with YouTube Shorts, the most successful shorts is something that just gives a hook at the beginning and a payoff immediately after. And that's the same with stand-up comedy, with movies, with TV show and YouTube videos. Mm. It's purely just somebody telling a story in the most effective way possible. And now there are various different techniques you can have. You have the hero's journey, or you can have crisis points, or different bits where it all goes wrong. But ultimately, that is the only thing that people are doing, is just telling a story effectively.
I guess your tick boxes, if you will, to having a good video is actually, there's quite a lot.
Yeah.
In order to get through, in order for something to bang. Do you know when you make something if it's going to work or not?
To answer your question, do I know that a video is going to bang every single time I make it? No, because I think you get so involved in the process. You get so excited. Like, I know this is going to work. This is going to work. This is going to work.
Yeah.
And you speak to like friends of yours, and they're like, I'm not so sure. And you're like, well, what do they know? Yeah. That's not what I wanted to ask. Yeah. That's not the answer they wanted. So perfect example is I had a video where was titled, I spent 24 hours with an actual elephant in the room. Mm. So the idea was that I was going to find an elephant, I was going to live with an elephant in a room for 24 hours. And I flew to India, I spent 24 hours in a room with an elephant. With the idea about the elephant in the room is a well-known idiom. And I said it to a friend of mine, he's like, I don't think people are going to get that idiom. I was like, shut up, they will.
They
of course
will.
They will.
I flew to India for this.
Exactly. I'd come back from India. I'd come back from India. And he was like, I'm not so sure, mate. It's like, well, I've just flown to India. And that video didn't pop off. It didn't bang. And that's when I was like, oh, okay, no, maybe he was right.
How important is committee in helping with your ideas, getting feedback early? Does it, because a lot of creators, or some creators and some creatives, right, are very much like, no, I'm doing exactly what I want to do, and this is all about me. In a platform like YouTube, especially, where it is about audience and about, you know, consensus in terms of opinion and so on, I would imagine it's quite important. But how do you find that sense of feedback? Is it a part of your process?
It is in the edit, I think. But once I think I'm the one who says, I know that I want to make this video. I know this video is going to work. I think this video is great. And I'm definitely not right all the time, but I kind of almost don't want to hear it at that point.
Yeah.
I want to hear it in the edit. And Zach, one of the guests you've had previously, we will send each other, especially the first 45 seconds of videos that we're making on a website called Frame.io, where you can leave comments.
Yeah.
And so we'll just roast each other's first 45 seconds. You're like, I'm bored. I've implemented something called the bored button. So when I've got an edit, I'll show it to someone who doesn't know YouTube, just a layperson, someone in my family or my friends, and I will give them lots of distractions. So I'll leave their phone on the table. I'll maybe even ask them to watch it in a busy room with one headphone in. And I'll get them to mark down every time they went to go pick up their
phone,
they went to close
with
the browser with time codes. Or I'll be there behind their shoulder, and I'll basically get them to
see like human trials in like a lab, and there's like a little window, and you're there with the clipboard and the glasses.
Because a ball like button allows me, and if I show it to five people and they're all showing the same point in which they're like, then I know, okay, that bit needs work, that I need to change the intro into that bit.
And how long in your journey from 80K to 1.5 mil, how long have you been thinking in this way?
probably in the last 2 years. Yeah. And in the last 2 years, I've gone from 250 to 1.5.
282% growth.
Yeah. Have you got that stat?
I've got that stat. Isn't that mad? In a year.
In a year. God, I mean, and I looked at my stats for this year, and I saw it went really big, and then it's kind of plateaued again, and I'm starting to worry, oh no, should I have kicked on there, and should it just be like this? But a lot of creators talk to me about, imagine the stock market goes up and down, but if you zoom out over a 2 or 3 year period, you've gone from there.
Yeah, it's always that thing of like, yeah, looking at taking that bigger picture, zooming out. I mean, how, we obviously talked about Satana a bit before, but how do you find the anxiety of it all, the stress of it all, because it's a stressful game. And being in a position where it's your personal brand, it's your face out there, it's your comedy out there, it's you, you're giving your whole energy, your heart and soul to this stuff. How do you find that on a personal level?
I think I'm exhausted. And I'm still struggling to comprehend what that means. The best thing that I did with the first kind of bit of money that I had was get therapy. So I have therapy pretty regularly. And my therapist said, who looks after you? And that's a question that always gets me. I always tell him off when he asks that question because he knows it's going to get me to cry on. I'm really upset about it. Yeah. But he's right. He was like, you are in an industry where you are giving to the audience all the time. You're giving to people all the time. You're being the person that people want you to be in the videos. And that is genuinely me. But I'm always on. I'm always, okay, here you go, here's a bit of content, here's this, here's that.
You're serving
all the time. And ultimately, that is incredibly draining. And when it's, and that's, I mean, that's what burnout is. That's purely what burnout is. And I do, it's not anxiety, it's more just pressure to come up with a new idea. Because a lot of my comments that I get in my videos, which is wonderful, lovely comments say, I never know what Max is going to do next. Oh, this is, I've never seen another YouTuber do a video like this. And that's an incredibly privileged position to be in.
Scary.
It's also, it's scary. Mm. I can't do a roasting the kind of Met Gala outfits on like a Twitch stream kind of style of video because my audience is like, what are you doing? We've not come for this. We've come for you putting Welcome to Luton in a field next to Gatwick Airport. We've come for serving roadkill to food critics. We've come for you running for London mayor. So it is I'm still learning about how I can separate myself from that and be not Max Fosh the YouTuber, but just Max. And it feels very, it's odd to talk about this in public to people because unless you are in that world, it's quite hard to understand, hard to comprehend. But it's an incredible job, but it does take a lot out of you.
And I guess it's about finding structures and systems to protect yourself.
And that's who the most successful creators in the world, the people who do that the best. Mr. Beast, biggest creator in the world. He's got a team of 150.
He's got a factory, literally.
He's got a factory. The Sidemen who you work with. How many people work with or for the Sidemen?
25, 30 in the full-time team.
Exactly.
Probably about 100 plus in the wider group.
In the wider ecosystem.
And there is a wider ecosystem, you know. But then I also think with both of those, the Sidemen is a group, Jimmy is an individual. They've got council. And they've got friends and they've got a team, like you do with Zach. But their brand is not just them, really. Like Mr. Beast obviously has Chandler and he has a bunch of people who are in his videos all the time. The Sidemen have the seven of them. And so for them, I can obviously speak for them firsthand, like they're seven friends who love being with each other. Mm. And not all the time, obviously, to the same extent, but they just enjoy that. They are genuine friends who enjoy the company. So that committee and that sense of attachment becomes a lot easier for the group because they share that load. Mm. And I think for Jimmy, there's probably a similar thing, I'd imagine, with his team because they share some of the creative load. And obviously, he's also, he's different in the way that he's trying to build. He's trying to build something, very unique over there. But I think that sense of almost, as you say, like sharing load, looking after yourself, like having friends and people around you, because it's from you speak to, it's lonely, right? It's a lonely game. Mm. And I think having that support is essential, isn't it, really?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I'm trying to learn how to build those systems, those teams. I'm not good at that. I'm good at being silly on camera and coming up with silly ideas. I'm not good at building a business and building a team. And so that's something that it's very hard to relinquish control. Mm. Very hard to trust someone to be like, okay, come in, I'm just going to, you run this business and almost employ me just as talent.
Yeah.
And I've tried to diversify my talents and who I am as a person, because I understand that being a YouTuber is incredibly draining and I want to get better at other things. And so I started doing stand-up, did a tour, and I'm now, I think I've got that kind of under control, because I want to have as many strings to my bow as possible so that if I can walk into a room with anybody, let's say someone YouTube-centric, they understand what I do on YouTube. But if I walk into TV producer's office, they have no idea what 1.5 million subscribers means, but they do know what performing at the London Palladium means or doing a tour means. And so I'm trying at the moment now to just kind of have as many different things that can be as valuable to as many different people as possible.
Yeah. And I've seen, I mean, should we talk about comedy?
Yeah.
Because I think it's so cool. And there's no one else in this country I've seen do it successfully, and you've smashed it.
Thank you.
It's so amazing. But talk to us about that. How did you get into it? Why comedy? Why was it a natural next step for you? And how did it all come about?
Yeah. So I've always done drama. I've always performed on stage. I now have this opportunity to perform to my own audience on stage. So I thought, well, there's one way to do that, and that's through stand-up comedy. But stand-up comedy is obviously the most terrifying thing you can do. And so I started, I thought, right, I need to be comfortable on stage. So I started just doing random open mic nights where no one knew who I was, what I was doing, and just... That was purely a way of getting on stage and being comfortable on stage.
A warm up.
So getting up on stage wasn't scary anymore. Mm. And Rob Beckett, the comedian, gave an incredible example about stand up comedy. And he was like, imagine you're starting a job and Monday, 9 a.m., you're really nervous at this new office job. You don't really know what you're doing. But by Friday of the first week, you've had 5 days there. You kind of know who's who, you know what you're doing, you know what your purpose is, and no reason you're there. That's a week. Stand-up comedy is exactly the same, but you just go to work 5 minutes at a time. So it takes so much longer for that week for you to feel comfortable. So I started out, right, I want to feel comfortable on stage. I then got approached by a director called Ed Stambaloujian, who directs all of Joe Lycett's stuff, but he also directed Dan and Phil, who are two huge YouTubers who did a world tour a couple of years ago, and he directed their world tour. So I found this guy and he was like, I want to work with you. And I was like, amazing. I'm not saying no to this opportunity.
So he did Joe Lycett's Got Your Back.
He does Joe Lycett's Got Your Back. Okay. He does all of Joe's stand-up stuff. He went to uni with Joe, so he knows him very well.
And great name as well. I love that. Yeah, what a name.
We just call him Sambo, because Stambaloujian is quite a mouthful. Yeah. So we spent about 2 or 3 years writing this show. And we're going to go to the Edinburgh Fringe in 2020, but that obviously was curtailed because of COVID. So I went on tour around the UK with it in 2021. I went to 15 different cities, performed 25 shows, finished that. And then this summer I did the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, which is a massive comedy festival up in Edinburgh. And you perform every day for a month, 30 days, same time. So I did that for a month. And then I just finished this iteration of this show with the show at the London Palladium, which is a 2,000 seater in London. And that, for me growing up, was so like such an iconic place. I would watch is where the Royal Variety Performance is on, and it's such an iconic venue. And so I performing there was just so awesome. And so I've now kind of done this first iteration of comedy, and I feel I can call myself a stand-up comedian, even though it feels odd to say, because I've done it the wrong way around.
You could tell that, you know, that was an accomplished, brilliant stand-up show in its own right. You could have never had any audience and people would have come to that show and respected it and appreciated it and really enjoyed it, because on its own two feet, it had, you know, a depth to it, right? And I think that's the bit for creators when they are going into new fields or, you know, starting brands, whatever, it has to be good at the end of the day. It can't be. And also when you're going into fields that carry a tradition and a respected route, you need an extra level of respect for the craft, because you've taken a shortcut to audience. Doesn't mean you've taken a shortcut to the craft, but a shortcut to audience. Yeah. So yeah, you did it amazingly.
Thank you very much. I mean, I really enjoyed it, but one thing I did realize is that it took up my time and meant I couldn't make videos. And so for 6 weeks in July, end of July and the whole of August, I didn't really make a YouTube video.
Yeah.
And it shows now in my metrics. It shows that I've now had a, and I need to, YouTube's all about momentum. And so that's hard.
But it can always be built back up.
And so again, it kind of go back to the conversation of putting teams in place where I can be away and the YouTube can still run itself. Mm. I mean, like the person who does it the best here in the UK is JJ KSI. He's got a million and one different projects going on, but he's still he's able to keep the momentum in almost all of them from a superhuman level. But that's probably because of the systems that you guys have got in place.
Yeah, and on his personal team as well with MAMS and everything, of course, it's boxing, music. I mean, there's so many strands to his world. And I think it's compartmentalizing and making sure that, I mean, his calendar's, you know, I've never seen anything like it. It's incredibly dense, but at the same time, there's a kind of system in terms of, I can tell from him and working with him and for the rest of the boys as well in various ways, there's a compartmentalized system where you can dip in and out, and there's a team to do a lot of the legwork to help you, because it's impossible otherwise. Or, you know, even when I think about the stuff that we've done and, you know, being able to launch so many things, it's all because we've found teams, partners to do the legwork in terms of, you know, the stuff that takes up that hard graft of time, and then we can do the bit that we do best. And as you say, it's finding what you do best and doing that, but finding other people to come and do the rest, because it's impossible to do both. Mm. So to close, Rahul, yes. I've obviously talked to you for hours and hours, but the future, what does it look like for you in terms of managing, balancing these strands? Where do you want to go next?
I think the most important thing for me is that it's sustainable. No matter what it is, it's what I'm doing is sustainable. I'm not feeling like I need to constantly give more and more of myself in order to, for it to work. I think I would love to still have the opportunity to be able to make videos that or make content that I really want to make and that I'm excited by, ultimately, is projects that I'm excited by. What I find that YouTube does is something called hedonic adaptation, where you start to get used to things doing well, and therefore you need to do something bigger for you to get a bigger hit of dopamine or whatever it is. And so I want to try and find a way in which I can really slow that down and see each individual video that I make as something that I'm proud of, just myself. I think that's a really good video, or that's a really good bit of content, and whatever happens when people view it is almost out of my control. I want to get better in certain areas. I think I want to become a better comedian. I want to become funnier. I want to study comedy more. I want to be a better comedy actor. I think that that's also something that I can bring value to.
And where do you see the future of the creative economy, especially in the UK, going? And that's a big question. But where do you see
it's
moving?
Only going to get bigger. There is no way that I think that this is slowing down. I think with the introduction of shorts, I think we're going to have a higher frequency and a higher turnover of personalities. Someone made a really good point that shorts or TikTok more specifically are like graffiti on the back of a toilet door in Times Square. So every day 1,000 people are going to go see that graffiti, but as soon as they leave that cubicle, they're going to completely forget what it said. And so I think a lot of people are going to get famous quickly, but I don't think that builds community, and I don't think that builds a relationship with the audience. So look, in terms of there's going to be more money that comes in from television, there's more money that's going to come in from advertisers to the creator economy, because I think they realize and they understand the power of, I think one of your tweets or one of your LinkedIn posts that said, I think that people still don't quite understand the power that creators do hold and do have. And I'm of the view that a rising tide lifts all ships. And so I'm always so excited when I see JJ have Prime that can't get in Asda, or I see James Marriott and Wilbur Suit kind of do incredibly well in the music side of things, because it showcases it every single time. It knocks a chip down in the wall of traditional media that we are just people that vlog ourselves getting milk. And actually that every single one of the people that makes content on the internet are incredibly talented and are very, very good storytellers. And it's such a meritocratic world. Like, content creation is the most meritocratic industry I think you can do, because your boss is your audience. You only succeed if your audience likes what you do. I mean, there is no nepotism in the world of YouTube. And coming from the family that I come from, I know quite a lot about nepotism. that's why I love it. Like, you can be anybody. And it's, as long as you make good stuff, it will be seen. And so I think the creative economy is only going to increase.
Yeah. And what is one piece of advice that you would give to somebody starting today?
Get good. be good at something, bring a value. You can find all the get rich quick schemes or the get views quick schemes. Of course you can. But ultimately what is going to last and what's going to make you feel happiest and fulfilled in the long run is knowing that you can either tell a story really well, you can make someone learn something really quickly, or you can make someone laugh, or whatever your thing is. I think you've got to be good at it.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. And finally, who is a creator that you are loving at the moment?
Who am I loving at the moment? I've said this a number of times. I love Bo Miles. He's an Australian creator who I just think he's a content creator, but not the traditional way that we see as a content creator. He's an Australian guy who lives in the outback, who just makes these beautiful documentaries about just things that he's interested in. And so he's absolutely fantastic. I think I'm going to have to look at my recommended Seek Discomfort, the Yes Theory Boys. I absolutely love what they're doing. Good. Yeah. They're a golf channel, but they're reinvigorating the golf industry and the amount of power they have over young people. I think someone said, if you are under 30 and you play golf, you know who these guys are.
Yeah.
And that's so powerful.
That's huge.
And that's an industry.
Fast forward 10 years.
Yeah.
What does that look like?
That's an industry that you don't look at golf and think like, oh yeah, social media, that's gonna change golf. But absolutely, those guys are going to completely 100% change golf and in that industry. So I think that's really, really cool. Casey Neistat, of course, he's awesome.
Yeah.
A guy called Jimmy the Giant. He's a creator who makes content about extreme sports, and they're kind of video essays, they're little documentaries.
Yeah.
And I love that because I'm not interested in extreme sports. I've never done an extreme sport in my life. Look at me, I'm made of like cheese string. But he puts it so well, and he was doing one about the whole drama of graffiti artists in the UK in the 90s that I watched. I was like, this is great.
That's so good.
Yeah. I didn't know I was interested in this. I do now. So yeah. Jimmy the Giant, I'm a big fan of.
Amazing. Well, look, Max, thank you so much for coming on.
That was amazing
speaking to you. Honestly, you could do it all day. For those who don't know, or where can people find you? What are your plugs? Your
Max Foch, just on YouTube. The way you spell Foch is like fish, but with an O. There you go. It's easy.
Straight Max Foch. Love it. Thank you so much.
Thanks very much.
Unboxed with Jordan Schwarzenberger is a Listen original in partnership with Arcade Media. The exec producer is Amber Bateman, the senior producer is Lucy Hunt, and the senior digital producer is Alice Tilley. Unboxed is recorded at PRL Studios in West London with the support of Michael Kalizinski.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall. With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need. You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit To get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.